What are you saying?
We're all grown-ups here, Cassano said. We know how the world works, so let's not pretend we don't. Mahmani told his guys to take the rest of us out, and Safir told you guys to take the rest of us out, and Rossi sure as hell told us to take the rest of you out. I'm being honest here. Mahmani and Safir and Rossi are all the same. They all want the whole pie. We all know that. Safir's guy said, We didn't do anything. We figured you did. We were talking about it all the way up here. It was obvious that Cadillac isn't a rental. We didn't do anything to the guy. We were going to wait for later. Us too. You sure? Yes. Swear? You swear first, Cassano said. On my mother's grave. Safir's guy said, On mine too. So what happened? He ran out. Must have. Maybe chicken. For short on discipline. Maybe Mahmani isn't what we think he is. Which raises possibilities. Nobody spoke. Cassano said, We have a vote here, don't you think? The four of us? We could take out Mahmani's other boy and leave each other alone. That way, Rossi and Safir end up with 50% more pie each. They could live with that. And we sure as hell could. Like a truce? Truces are temporary. Call it an alliance. That's permanent. Nobody spoke. Safir's guys glanced at each other. Not a difficult decision. A two-front war or a one-front war? History was positively littered with examples of smart people choosing the latter over the former. Vincent was still watching out the window. He saw quiet conversation, low tones, some major tension there, then some easing, the body language relaxing, some speculative looks, some tentative smiles. Then all four men took their hands out of their pockets and shook, four separate ways, wrists crossing, some pats on the back, some slaps on the shoulder. Four new friends, all suddenly getting along just great. There was a little more talk after that, all of it fast and breezy, like simple, obvious steps were being planned and confirmed. And then there were more pats on the back and slaps on the shoulder, all shuffling, mobile, catch-you-later kind of stuff. And then the two big, dark-skinned men climbed back into their red Ford. They closed their doors and got set to go. And then the Italian, who had done all the talking, suddenly remembered something and turned back and tapped on the driver's glass. The window came down. The Italian had a gun in his hand. The Italian leaned in, and there were two bright flashes, one hard after the other, like orange camera strobes right there inside the car, behind the glass. All six windows lighting up and two loud explosions. Then a pause, then two more bright flashes, two more loud explosions, evenly spaced, carefully placed. Then the Italian stepped away, and Vincent saw the two dark-skinned men all slumped down in their seats, somehow suddenly much smaller, deflated, diminished, smeared with dark matter, their heads lolling down on their chests, their heads altered and misshapen, parts of their heads actually missing. Vincent fell to the floor under the inside sill of his window, and vomited in his throat. Then he ran for the phone. Angelo Mancini opened the Red Ford's trunk and found two nylon rollerboard suitcases, which more or less confirmed a personal theory of his. Real men carried their bags. They didn't wheel them around like women. He unzipped one of the bags and rooted around and came up with a bunch of shirts on wire hangers, all folded together concertina style. He took one and tore it off the hanger and crush the hanger flat and open the Ford's filler neck, and use the hanger to poke the shirt down into the tube, one sleeve in, the body all bunched up, the other sleeve trailing out. He lit the trailing cuff with a paper match from a book he had taken from the diner near the Marriott. Then he walked away and got in the blue Chevrolet's passenger seat, and Roberto Cassano drove him away. The road beyond the post and rail fence outside the dining room window stayed dark. The doctor got up and left the room and came back with four mugs of fresh coffee on a plastic tray. His wife sat quiet. Next to her, Dorothy Coe sat quiet. The sisterhood, enduring, waiting it out. Just one long night out of more than 9,000 in the last 25 years. Most of them tranquil, presumably, but some of them not. 9,000 separate sunsets, each one of them heralding who knew what. Reacher was waiting it out, too. He knew that Dorothy wanted to ask what he had found in the county archive, but she was taking her time getting around to it, and that was okay with him. He wasn't about to bring it up unannounced. He had dealt with his fair share of other people's tragedy. All of it bad, none of it easy. But he figured there was nothing worse than the Coe family story. Nothing at all. So he waited. 10 silent minutes, then 15. And finally she asked,
"Did they still have the files?"
He answered, "Yes, they did."
"Did you see them?"
"Yes, I did."
"Did you see her photograph?"
"She was very beautiful."
"Wasn't she?"
Dorothy said, smiling, not with pride, because the kid's beauty was not her achievement, but with simple wonderment. She said,
"I still miss her, which I think is strange, really, because the things I miss are the things I actually had, and they would be gone now anyway. The things I didn't get to see would have happened afterward. She would be 33 now, all grown up. And I don't miss those things because I don't have a clear picture of what they might have been. I don't know what she might have become. I don't know if she would have been a mother herself and stayed around here, or if she would have been a career girl, maybe a lawyer, or a scientist living far away in a big city."
"Did she do well in school?"
"Very well."
"Any favorite subjects?"
"All of them."
"Where was she going that day?"
"She loved flowers. I liked to think she was going searching for some."
"Did she roam around often?"
"Most days, when she wasn't in school. Sundays especially. She loved her bike. She was always going somewhere. Those were innocent times. We thought it was safe here. She did the same things I did when I was 8.
Reacher paused a beat and said, "I was a cop of sorts for a long time, so may I ask you a serious question?" She said,
"Yes."
"Do you really want to know what happened to her?"
"Can't be worse than what I imagine."
Reacher said, "I'm afraid it can, and it sometimes is. That's why I asked. Sometimes it's better not to know." She didn't speak for a long moment. Then she said,
"My neighbor's son hears her ghost screaming."
"I met him," Reacher said. "He smokes a lot of weed."
"I hear it, too, sometimes. Or I think I do. It makes me wonder."
"I don't believe in ghosts."
"Neither do I, really. I mean, look at me."
Reacher did. A solid, capable woman, about 60 years old, blunt and square, worn down by work, worn down by hardship, fading slowly to gray. She said,
"Yes, I really want to know what happened to her."
Reacher said, "Okay.